Hello, med students. My name is Zach Olson, and thank you for downloading this episode of the EM Clerkship Podcast. Today, we are going to be joined by Dr. Ryder. He is the program director at the University of Tennessee, Nashville. And what I would like to do is some interviews with program directors around the country. I'm currently sending them emails and hoping for responses, and Dr. Ryder was the first to respond. And the purpose of these interviews is to give you honest, real, inside sneak peeks into each individual residency program, what the training is actually like, what the area is actually like, what some of the strengths are, and maybe even what some of the challenges are of training there. You've probably heard that you can get a good, solid training at almost every accredited emergency medicine program in the country, and it's true. But I'm trying to help you find the right program specifically for you. I'm trying to parse out some of the differences and really get into the details, strengths, weaknesses, unique features. It's like eating pizza. There are a million different possible pizza combinations, and the vast majority of them are going to be completely delicious. But what I want pan crust, white sauce with pepperoni sausage, green peppers. As weird and unique and as possibly disgusting to some of you as that sounds, that's what I know I like. And so that's the purpose of this podcast, is to interview these programs over time and help you find the right one for you. So today, let's get the real scoop on the University of Tennessee, Nashville, with the program director, Dr. Ryder. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Ryder. If you don't mind, first, can you just give me some of the basics, like give me a quick overview of University of Tennessee, Nashville, and kind of just give me some of the basics. What is the program all about?
Yeah, sure. Well, we are a 3-year emergency medicine residency. We started in July of 2015. Currently we're in our fourth year of our program as we're doing this podcast right now. We just graduated our first class a few months ago, and Zach, you, of course, were one of those graduates.
Woohoo! Yeah. So
I'm glad to hear that you're doing well. And it's a collaboration between the University of Tennessee College of Medicine, also the St. Thomas Health Network, and Middle Tennessee Emergency Physicians, which is an independent democratic group in the Middle Tennessee area.
And so tell me a little bit more about that. So with the Middle Tennessee Emergency Physicians, that's like a group that like runs the emergency department, or like is that through University of Tennessee? What do you mean by that?
Right. So we're a private independent democratic group. It's probably not that common of a model in residency programs. The more common model is being a faculty of all your faculty are employed by an academic medical center. But since we're all equal owners in our own emergency medicine practice, I think it helps get our residents a lot of exposure to the real world of emergency medicine, a lot of different business concepts in emergency medicine, things like that. It's very helpful. We're a pretty small program. We're 8 residents a year, but we've got a ton of patients. We've got over 90,000 patients a year that we're seeing at our main site at St. Thomas Rutherford Hospital in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is about 35 minutes outside of Nashville. So there's plenty of patients to go around, lots of great opportunities for our residents.
So is like Murfreesboro a suburb? That is this like a, I guess what I'm trying to ask, is this a county hospital, community hospital, academic? Is it sounds community?
Right. We're very much a community hospital. Okay. So it's a pretty new hospital. It's built in 2010, but very, very nice. It replaced our old hospital that was over 100 years old. So we've got a beautiful emergency department. Everything runs very, very well in our emergency department, but it is a community hospital. We're the second busiest emergency department in the state of Tennessee. And you're not really going to have competition with other residents because it's not an academic medical center. So there's really no other residents who are in the hospital other than family practice residents who spend a little bit of time rotating in our emergency department. We do have a bunch of other residents throughout the St. Thomas Health Network and the University of Tennessee at some of our sister hospitals, but you're not going to really have interactions with them. So you're going to have access to all the procedures and resuscitations and great cases and all that for all of your own patients without any competition. In addition to, you're also going to be working one-on-one with one of your emergency attendings for most shifts, so you're going to have the opportunity to also be brought in a lot of the really good opportunities that they have as well.
So I guess one of my questions is, since it's a community hospital, in, you know, it sounds like it's not in Nashville itself, like, is there enough pathology to go around, or is it just kind of, you know, runny noses, ear, you know, sore ear, like that kind of thing? Like, is there enough training there since it's not getting like all the referrals from these other hospitals?
Yeah, absolutely. We have plenty of acuity and plenty of patients. That's the second busiest emergency department in the state. We do act as a regional referral center. We are the only hospital in a small city of 140,000 people, so we get the full spectrum of pathology for that community. We also are the closest hospital that has a higher level of capability for a good chunk of Middle Tennessee for pretty much everybody who's east and south of us. So we end up getting a large amount of patients who travel an hour plus to see us.
And so one of the big questions I know a lot of med students have is there trauma experience here? Like, is it a trauma center, or how does that work since it's a big hospital, but it's not in a major city? What's the trauma like?
Right. So we don't hold a trauma designation, but we do see a fair amount of trauma at our site. You know, we are the only hospital generally in our area that's pretty comfortable handling trauma cases that come in. So EMS is pretty comfortable bringing us trauma, as well as the community also come in for walk-in trauma. Also, the sickest traumas, generally a good chunk of them will end up diverting to our hospital if the patient becomes quite unstable, because otherwise, because we're kind of on the way to to the only real trauma center in the region, which is in Nashville. So you'd have to drive by us essentially to get there. So if the patients get pretty unstable, they come in and we resuscitate them and intubate them and put in tubes and lines and all that. And then we'll kind of package them up to move on after that.
And before we move on here to kind of some more stuff about like day in the life, a question that I want to ask you, and I plan on asking other program directors in the future, but with everything that happened with SUMA, has this program ever had issues with accreditation or been put on probation or put on warning or anything like that?
No, we are fully accredited from the get-go. Certainly never on a probation or anything like that. I think that this is a very secure, stable residency. Things are going quite well.
Awesome. So, I kind of want to move into this next part with some questions, more of what it's like, and I know the answer to a lot of these, but what it's like kind of day in the life of a resident should they choose to come to your program. And so I just have a list of questions, and we can kind of cover a few of them, but like, would Certainly. You say that the residents, would you say that, like, me personally, I'm curious about this, did we work the same, like, kind of the average amount of hours as other programs? Did we work more hours, less hours? Kind of where would you put us on that spectrum?
Right. Well, my target was to get you on par with the typical amount of hours at other residency programs, maybe a drop below that, and that's where we're at. So there are 9.5-hour shifts, and that includes essentially an hour and a half built in to help you wrap up the work that you're doing and finish documentation and things like that. And then 18 during your first, second, and third year, and that'll also include teaching shifts during your third year, where you're really more focused on supervising medical students and junior learners.
And I'm sorry, you cut out just a little bit there, but can you say again how many shifts a month there is?
Right, so 20 shifts as an EM1, 19 shifts as an EM2, and 18 shifts as an EM3.
And they're 9.5 hours.
Correct.
Okay. And then how much time is spent in the emergency department versus, like, are there what are the non-emergency medicine months? Like, what months are those that aren't in the department? How's that balance?
Yeah, I'm a big believer that emergency medicine is best learned in the emergency department. So you're going to have 26 out of 36 months in the emergency department, including orientation month. And then you're going to work in intensive care unit, 3 months adult, 1 month PICU. And then there's going to be 2 months of electives. We felt that even as a three-year program, it was important to give you extra elective time, really help you identify and develop an area of interest in emergency medicine. And then we have 4 months of off-service rotations in things like OBGYN, anesthesiology, and ED ultrasound, EMS, and scholarly activity, as well as trauma.
Okay. And is there like required stuff that's not clinical? It's not related to a rotation. Is there other things every month that we're doing?
You mean like
Is there required wellness activities? Is there like that are mandated? Is there mandated conference time? Like, what else are we spending our time on when we're there? That's required.
Right. Sure. So we do have team building and social and wellness activities on a pretty regular basis. We have a monthly journal club, which is a real fun experience. We do that at attendings' homes, and our weekly conference is for 5 hours on every Thursday, and we have really high quality didactics, including lots of different workshops, skills workshops, mock world boards, you know, simulation, ultrasound workshops. We have access to cadaver lab, and we have a pretty robust non-clinical conference curriculum as well.
And then some of the real pragmatic stuff, like where do we park? Like, is there a lot of traffic? Do we have to pay for parking? What's parking like?
Right. Well, you park generally like right in front of the emergency department, like often like a 20-second walk. So that works out real well. You don't have to pay for it. Commuting, you asked about, I think, and traffic.
Yeah,
it's really very favorable because most of the residents live right by the hospital in Murfreesboro. I'd say a good chunk of the residents live a few minutes away, either in their own home or in and traffic's not too bad. About one out of each class of eight typically lives in Nashville and commutes in, and then they do deal with some more traffic issues and things like that if they choose to do that.
Is there stuff to eat at the hospital? I know the answer to this question, but is there like what when we're on shift and we're working hard? Like, do we have access to like something to drink or coffee or?
Yeah, we give you plenty of access to food. We have a nice physician's lounge that you have complete access to that's open 24/7. We put out nice meals for you there, as well as plenty of grab-and-go stuff for snacks and drinks and things like that. Also, access to the cafeteria. They put a meal card on. And plenty of opportunities for you to get well-fed.
And is the food, like, do we pay for it or is it free? Do we pay for the food? Is it free food? Like, do we pay for the cafeteria or is it taken out of our check or how's that work?
Right. So we do put a bunch of money on a meal card for you to utilize. So most people aren't spending any money out of pocket.
Okay.
So taking care of for you.
And then tell me a little bit about Murfreesboro. I don't think most people listening have been to Murfreesboro, Tennessee. What's the city like? Like what, you know, just for example, like what are some of the restaurants you like to visit in the area? What do the residents at our program, like what do we actually do for fun? And I know, again, some of the answers to this, but what's in the area?
Right. So Murfreesboro is one of the fastest growing small cities in the country, and it is the fastest growing small city in Tennessee. And you know, it's in the Nashville metro area, which is about 2 million people, and it's a kind of a college town. The university is the largest undergrad in Tennessee, and that's about 10 minutes from the hospital. So you get some degree of a college town vibe to it. With all the growth, we've just got a ton of great new dining and entertainment and housing options available. There's literally hundreds of places where you could eat and drink and entertain yourself within, say, 2 miles of the hospital, and it's being built up, really at a very rapid. So, yeah, the residents really enjoy spending time in Murfreesboro. There's lots of stuff to do. Also, there's lots of events all the time, and festivals and things like that. And then Nashville is about 35 minutes away and is really a world-class entertainment mecca that has certainly all the entertainment options of much bigger cities. So it's great to have access to that so close as well.
And just for you personally, what is your favorite part about living in the area? Like, what's your personal favorite spot or thing to do?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a simple guy. I just love going out to a nice restaurant or a nice bar and hanging out with my buddies, having some good food and drink and conversation and things like that. But there's also tons of major attractions in the area, as well as also tons of big events. We have all the big music events all happen in the Nashville area. We've got a bunch of pro sports in the area and things like that. Kind of world's your oyster here. We've got just tons of people coming to visit the area every year because there's so much fun stuff to do. Actually, it was just last year, Travel and Leisure magazine ranked Nashville the number one best city to visit in the country.
Oh, interesting.
So gives you an idea of how well regarded the area is.
All right. So let's dive into some of the more like nitty gritty. What makes the University of Tennessee Nashville kind of what makes you you? Let's start off with this question. Like, how would you describe the personality of the different faculty and residents at the program? Are they introverted, extroverted? Are they single? Are they married? That kind of thing.
I think it's a pretty extroverted group. People really enjoy each other's company. We've got some fantastic camaraderie amongst the residents and the rest of the faculty and the nurses and the medical staff. We really enjoy each other's company and try to spend a lot of time together. It is probably compared to a lot of other residencies, might be a bit more of a non-traditional group. And I think that's just, really large residencies that are located in the right in the core of large cities probably are more likely to attract the youngest single people, and residencies like ours, where you're in an area where it's probably more doable to own a home and things like that. The cost of living is a lot lower and stuff like that. We do tend to attract some people who might be having a more non-traditional path, might be a few years out of residency out of medical school, or more. A lot of our residents are married or kind of in long-term relationships and things like that. Some of our residents have kids. We've got some of the best school districts in the country around us.
And you're saying that, and I understand what you're saying about the residents being non-traditional. I experienced that. And we'll get to that a little bit more in a bit as well. Another question. So you have such a unique group of residents. Can you maybe go into specifics on one or two of them and maybe say like one or two interesting things that are happening around the program, interesting projects or an interesting new endeavor or accomplishment, that kind of stuff?
Sure. Well, one resident we had, he was a little bit of a pain in the ass when he was with us. He just graduated. His name was Zach, and he was very interested in kind of teaching medical students and creating a podcast series to help educate them about different topics, preparing for emergency medicine and making good choices. So we certainly encouraged him to do that kind of stuff. And I think during residency, we helped set up space and AV equipment and things like that in our residency offices so we could focus a little bit more on that. And we were pretty flexible in creating more of a make-your-own elective to focus on podcasts, particularly in areas, clinical areas, where he felt that he wasn't as strong as and would learn more from creating podcasts and educating others on those topics. So that worked out well, and then he ended up moving on to join a nice private democratic group at a community hospital in his hometown of Columbus, Ohio. So Yeah, that's one person. I can go into others if you'd like.
Yeah, that was one thing that really stood out to me about training there was you very much offered me the opportunity to kind of go after starting this podcast up to the point of where I had like a room inside the residency offices that I had a microphone stand set up in, and you were giving me some time off to do that project. I just thought it was something really cool about the program. And so that's one of what I viewed as one of the strengths of the program. Well, in addition to that, and I'm going to ask you the flip of this question too, just so you can brace yourself, but what would you see as one of the unique strengths of this program?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll expand a little bit more on what you just mentioned in that we really do encourage residents to identify an area of interest and develop a niche within emergency medicine to really develop a true career in emergency medicine rather than viewing it as a job. We have a lot of really strong leaders within our faculty, you know, big, prominent national leaders. And we, you know, we feel we have a responsibility to really help our residents explore other things and get to the next level. So our residency does have a lot more focus on leadership development and developing your niche, as well as also career development and preparation for the real world of emergency medicine than most other residencies. As I kind of mentioned earlier in the podcast, as part of a private democratic group, we have a lot of non-clinical expertise and business expertise, too, that we really try to impart to our residents to put them in the best possible position to find the right job for them and to make the right career choices. So we're very proud of that. But in addition to that stuff, when you say, hey, you know, one of the things that you're really proud of that's really unique about our program, and I think it's, for us, a biggie is our commitment to individualized teaching. We were able to have an incredibly well-resourced residency where we have a very favorable faculty to resident ratio, a very favorable resident to patient ratio, and that allows interesting things. So the vast majority of your shifts as a resident, you're going to work one-on-one with an attending. You're going to start at the same shift time as your attending. You're going to present all your patients to the same attending. And I think that is incredibly powerful from a learning perspective to really help you get the best supervision, the best feedback. And then we also feel it's important for all of our attendings to remain true clinicians. So your attendings are also going to be seeing patients alongside you. And that creates an opportunity because there's so many patients that and it's a relatively limited residency, 8 residents a year times 3 years, that your attendings are going to see, you know, get a lot of procedures and see a lot of interesting cases and things like that. And then they'll be able to bring you in on all that. So not only will you get your fair share of all this great stuff without having to worry about other residents from other services taking away your fracture reductions and things like that, but you're also going to have a lot more of that filtered to you. So there's very few residencies in the country where you're going to work the vast majority of your shifts one-on-one with an attending. I think it's probably more common you're going to be presenting to like 3 different attendings or something like that. And we really think it makes a big difference. Our residents are absurdly well prepared and strong clinically when they finish out their residency.
I want to take you back to something you said that I saw on the website as well. And it's that real world. On the website, it says we're going to teach you the real world emergency medicine. You said it again, we teach you real world. What do you mean by that?
Right. Well, you know, the reality is that after residency, you don't live in a isolated environment just like residency. You know, the real world of emergency medicine has lots of other aspects to it. So we want you to be incredibly well-versed in all sorts of other things like, you know, personal finance, really understanding career tracks and making the right career choices, finding the right job for you, contracts and negotiation. We want you to really understand, you know, what employers are looking about in the future, all sorts of things like metrics and patient satisfaction. We want you to really understand medical legal risk and liability, understand things like coding and billing and reimbursement. We want to get you prepared to put your best foot forward. So we want to teach you interviewing skills, and, you know, are more than happy to, and almost all of our residents take advantage, will go over their CVs and their cover letters and their contracts and things like that. We want you to be really well prepared to position yourself for a good career in emergency medicine and to really excel at that career in emergency medicine. And it's more than just simply knowing how to take care of sick patients to be an effective emergency doc. We want to really teach you about patient flow and throughput and get you comfortable. How do you become efficient and effective at what you're doing?
And so I'm going to ask kind of the flip side to some of these strengths here. Every strong program, the flip side of like something you're really strong at is, you know, your Achilles heel, the weakness that kind of stems out of having that strength or having those features of your program. What would you say is like the number one Achilles heel that kind of keeps coming up while in residency that, residents or potential applicants should keep in mind before applying there, something that they need to kind of accept as a part of going
right
to that program?
Right. So I would say it's that two of our months to give you the best possible educational experience, we require you to travel. And I know that's not ideal. So we have a dedicated travel month and a dedicated PICU month. And the travel month is at University Medical Center in Knoxville, about 3.5 to 4 hours away. And the PICU rotation is at Erlanger Medical Center at UT Chattanooga. In Chattanooga, about an hour and a half away. So for both of those rotations, we'll set you up with no cost to you. They're fantastic rotations. The trauma experience is just an incredibly high volume, dedicated trauma experience where you really get a lot of good management and procedural skills, and it's a very nice foil to your trauma experience in Murfreesboro, where we don't have nearly the absolute number of traumas, but it's a very real-world trauma experience, and we do get plenty of very sick traumas, but all those traumas you're going to completely manage on your own. Every single trauma in Murfreesboro is going to be run by the emergency residents under the supervision of the emergency attending. You're going to make all the decisions yourself. You're going to do all the procedures yourself, and you're going to be doing it within, the normal, ebb and flow of the emergency department. But that dedicated trauma experience is also really good to a more, structured, regimented trauma team environment. But for both of those, you're going to have to be away for a month during your second year, which I understand is certainly an inconvenience for our residents.
And then you said that the program will pay for housing or something like that in those areas. So you don't have to commute back and forth. You just are kind of gone for a month.
Yeah, I mean, most of the residents will come back and forth, once or twice or three times, depending on what they want to do. But yeah, you'll be set up with a nice apartment at no cost to you there. We try to be real flexible for people with families and stuff like that to, create something that, they've got enough, room for, family to stay with them for some time and things like that if they'd like.
Are you still required to come back for like conferences or like the in-service or are you just gone for a month with, like, what are you required to do back in Murfreesboro?
Yeah, you're not really required to come back for anything other than the in-service would be an exception in that if you happen to be on an away month during that month, then yeah, you'll come back for the in-service test.
Sure. And then going along with trauma, what is the PEDS training like? You said that there's a PICU rotation. Is that where the majority of the PEDS is?
Well, the majority of the emergency department, I think that we probably see about the third most number of kids in our emergency department in the state. So there's plenty of kids around in the emergency department. It's integrated throughout, so you'll see kids every month. You'll see kids every shift. But our dedicated PICU experience at UT Chattanooga is a very a very well-run rotation, excellent teaching. You're working pretty hard during these PICU and trauma months, but they're excellent educational experiences. Our residents have very high opinions of them,
and that goes along.
And they feel it's definitely worth being away for the month.
And that goes along with a question that one of the med students sent me is, what is the hardest year of all 3 years? Like, which year, if they match there, should they brace themselves for?
Well, honestly, we really try to be pretty pretty humane. You know, we're very much about resident wellness as well. You know, I don't want to put my residents through anything, you know, just to beat up on them if it's not going to be a good educational experience. So, you know, I'd say work hours are pretty reasonable. There's no call throughout residency. You know, it's very humane residency, but you're going to get to see tons and tons of patients. Oh my God, I apologize. I completely forgot where you were going with your question. Can you repeat that one more time?
So the question was of years one, two, or three at the program, which year would you say is the hardest year?
I think the first year is definitely going to be the hardest, and just that, you know, you're drinking from the fire hose initially, and in that everything's so new to you. The learning curve is so high as an intern, and you know, we'll give you plenty of rope to run with. You know, we don't preclude you from doing anything as an intern. If you're comfortable doing so, you could be, you know, intubating patients and putting in lines and doing stuff your first day. Certainly you could run a code first day and things like that. Your attending will be standing next to you, making sure you don't, you know, screw it up. But yeah, we'll let you do whatever you want. We've had several residents who have done thoracotomy during their first few months of residency and things like that. But you're working more shifts during your first year. You're working one more shift in your second year, and that's one more shift in your third year. So, yeah, I'd say first year is the toughest. Second year is a little tricky in that you've got the 2 travel months. So for some people that makes it a bit tougher, but it's pretty reasonable. You get to spend a lot of time in your emergency department each year, which is great. And then during your third year, you're only spending 1 month outside of the emergency department during adult ICU, plus minus if you what you're doing in the elective month. So I'd say our third years really enjoy kind of getting into their groove at the home base in the emergency department.
And then I have one last question in this section before we move on to just some basic application stuff. But, the programs in the area, I was looking at the map. So there's the program, University of Tennessee, Memphis. There's the one University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and then there's Vanderbilt. If you don't mind just a little bit kind of differentiating yourself from those other programs right next to you.
Sure. Vanderbilt's going to be very much a really academic medical center environment. There's lots of other residents and fellows around, and that certainly has pluses and minuses to it. The program in Memphis, and again, I don't know everything about these programs. I've got, you know, limited understanding, but my understanding is you know, definitely there's more kind of county aspects to that program, which is a great fit for some people, not as much for others. At Erlanger Medical Center in Chattanooga, that's going to be, I guess more of an academic medical center environment as well, but not, not nearly as many residents and fellows as you would expect at Vanderbilt. So, out of the 4 programs in Tennessee, you know, our program, you know, what really makes us different is that we are at, you know, this high volume, efficient community hospital, which is a very different environment than typically these other residency programs, but also those other things that I mentioned, individualized, teaching, a lot of one-on-one time with your attendings, a very robust, real world of emergency medicine exposure and curriculum, you know, lots of leadership development and opportunities to develop areas of interest, a very robust resident training program, and just a huge laser focus on resident education rather than meeting the service needs of the institution. So everything that we do is about how can we prepare you to be the best emergency doctor you can be. You know, we're also very clinically focused, although we've got great academic resources through the University of Tennessee and through St. Thomas Health. you know, at the end of the day, you know, our top goal, no question about it, is we want to make you beyond comfortable as a attending on day one, you know, practicing by yourself on that busy overnight shift, able to handle anything that they throw at you. And, you know, from talking to our graduates, we've really succeeded in that goal.
And I can actually speak to that real quick, but day one as an attending, I took a job at what ended up being a very high acuity hospital, just tremendously high acuity. And I mean, it was difficult. There's a jump as you started the attending, but I very much felt prepared, and I was managing cases that never in a million years I thought I could have managed in the way I did, just from having to independently do so much while at University of Tennessee, Nashville. I have a few questions for the applicants who want to apply to your program. And the first one, and I know that there's some bias here, but kind of scale of 1 to 10, 1 being there's open slots every year and you're not even filling your list, and 10 being you rank 8 applicants and those 8 applicants all choose your program. As far as competitiveness, where do you fall on that scale? How competitive do you believe that your program is to match at?
I would say we're moderately competitive to more competitive. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you know, we have really high standards, but we're generally able to, you know, identify top quality applicants who really want to come to us. So, you know, hey, we're going to review every application. Feel free, apply. We'll check it out and all that. But we've got a lot of good things going for us. So we generally have been pretty lucky in getting a lot of really high quality, interested people.
What would you say is the kind of the average range of step one scores? Do you have a step one cutoff? What is kind of the range of scores that applicants should kind of keep in the back of their head?
Right. We definitely do not have an absolute cutoff. Again, we'll review any application, but you know, step scores are important. It's really the only standardized way we can compare applicants from different schools, since school grading systems are so, you know, completely out of sync with each other. I would say that in general, the residents that we've matched over the last 4 years have typically had step one score probably around 235 to 240, and a step two score around 250 on average.
And kind of along with that, but different, how many away rotations do you like to see from your applicants?
Well, we'd prefer to see 2 or more away rotations. I don't think you get anything. I don't think you really get special points out of having more than 2. We'll certainly consider you if you have 1 away rotation. We understand that sometimes it's just not really feasible to get more than 1, especially in a timely manner. But we are more comfortable and confident in the evaluation of away rotations if we've got more than 1 data point to look at.
And what, this is another question that I got from a medical student, but when you're looking at applications, you said that there's not a strict cutoff. Is there something that you're looking for? Like, what on paper makes an applicant stand out to you?
Right. Well, like most programs, we really care a lot about emergency medicine SLOEs. That's super important. You know, board scores are certainly quite important, especially for step two. And I definitely encourage people to get step two done. I think it helps you, since most BM people do significantly better on step two than step one. Certainly, we're going to look at all the other intangibles in your application. We don't care as much about clinical rotation grades, just because they're so all over the map from place to place, and there's so many places that are pass-fail and things like that. We'll certainly take your dean's letter into account. We don't put much stock in non-emergency medicine recommendations. I'd say about at least 99% of them are glowing, so they don't really mean anything. And then our program in particular, we definitely, you know, really care also about some of the other stuff, some of the things like leadership activities, service activities, things like that. We really like it when our residents or our future residents have been involved in a lot of different things throughout their medical school experience and before. You know, we think that students who have you know, keen interest in different things and have really, you know, shown that they want to participate in a lot of different things, become residents who are bringing a lot of ideas to the table and doing really fun and interesting things. And we've had so many accomplished residents who have really done all these great things. We really like to keep that going.
And this is another big question, but the standardized video, the videos, I didn't even have to do this when I applied, but how are you currently using that? Is that something you weigh heavily or...
No, it's, again, the problem is that it's not really emergency medicine specific enough. What I care about as an emergency medicine program director is very different than what all program directors in other fields really care about. So having a standardized score for an interview that's not emergency medicine specific really isn't terribly helpful to us. So it might be a tiebreaker when you've got a whole bunch of people who you've got scored pretty much about the same and you're down to a couple interviews. But I would say that there's very few things in an application that matters less to me in particular.
And then I want to kind of highlight three specific groups of applicants and kind of just get your overall, I guess, friendliness to them or whatever the term is. But DO students, I know that now we're combining residencies, but is this, would you consider this program DO friendly?
Sure. I would say that typically, you know, we have four classes so far for our three-year residency program, and we typically have one or two, you know, DO students in our class. We have one of the medical schools in Tennessee is a DO school that really does a great job, and we've had several residents who have been alumni of that school. So, yeah, absolutely. You know, we'll certainly consider all applicants, but we've been lucky and we've had a bunch of national DO students.
And then the second group is IMGs and the international students out there. Would you ever accept an IMG? Have you ever?
Sure. You know, we have 24 residents right now in our 3 years, and right now we have one international resident from St. George's who's doing a fantastic job. We've also had a prior chief resident in our inaugural year that was also an international grad and did a fantastic job for us and is really killing it as an emergency attending now. So yeah, absolutely, we'll consider all applicants. That being said, there's no question that for us and pretty much every program out there, there's a much higher bar, you know, for allopathic applicants, particularly for international schools. So, yeah, we want to see, you know, truly exceptional candidates. But if you're a truly exceptional candidate, absolutely, we'll take a real look at things.
And then the third group of applicants that I want to highlight are applicants that have like that big red flag on their application. Maybe they had some legal, you know, they have a legal issue, or they failed the USMLE, or they have an issue of some substance thing, or I don't even know. But just if there's a big red flag on the application, what does it take for you to consider them?
Well, it really takes for the rest of their application to be truly exceptional. So, you know, we kind of have a scoring grid where we score all different aspects of the application. And if there is a red flag, we're going to take several points away depending on how significant that red flag is. And that's going to drop you down quite a bit. But if you're really exceptional otherwise, then absolutely you could still get an interview, even if things have gone wrong. But yeah, if you're not the strongest applicant and you've got a major red flag, then you're probably not going to make the cut. I would keep in mind that sometimes what an applicant thinks is a huge red flag really isn't like a particularly big deal to us. I remember, you know, one of our residents who graduated told me that they were really worried about that. I think they had a drunken driving issue on their application from about like 12 years prior, and they thought that was going to be, you know, this just huge deal breaker. And for us, it wasn't that big of a deal. 12 years have gone by, and there wasn't any evidence of any sort of problems, you know, since then. At a certain point, you know, we can chalk things up to somebody, yeah, they really screwed up at some point when they were younger, but they're not that person anymore. On the other hand, certainly any sort of repeated behavior, I mean, repeated pattern or, you know, super high risk, you know, type of situation, that's going to be a deal breaker for us.
And you were saying, you had just mentioned, you said that there's like a scoring, like you do some sort of score. Like, how do you come up with that, if you don't mind? Or is it, I don't know if it's top secret, like a, but like what kind of goes into that?
That's not top secret. We, you know, we score different categories, you know, on a 1 to 10 scale or sometimes on a smaller scale for things that we don't think are as important, but really it's the core things that I talked about, like board scores, slow ease, your school and activities and involvement and intangibles, your dean's letter. Those are going to be your main components. And then the biggest component by far, if you've made the cut based on that to get an interview, is going to be your interview score itself. So we have you interview with myself, one of our associate program directors, one of our faculty members, and one of our residents, and then we have everybody give equal weighting for an interview score based on our, you know, impressions of you and how successful you'll be joining us, really more based on personality fit and stuff like that from the interview perspective. And that ends up being about 40% of your overall score is based on the interview. So, you know, anybody who gets an interview, if they kill the interview, they can absolutely get a, they'll absolutely be primed to get a spot. On the other hand, you could be about the top guy that we're interviewing on paper, and if we really don't like you on the interview, you're not going to end up with us.
Are there any like specific pet peeves that you see on interview day that like are the biggest pet peeve to you that just you won't match them?
Well, I think the big deal breakers are just some people have clearly a personality that is way different than what we're looking for. Some people, you know, and we don't see them very often, but just are. You know, can be, you know, if you're just so clearly, you know, belligerent or confrontational or things like that, and you're not going to get along with others, that's going to be a real problem. It's really difficult to make that shine on an interview that right. In just a short period of time that you're going to be that difficult, but some people show that. Not a deal breaker, but it definitely hurts is, you know, we have, you know, plenty of applicants who just don't really have any real, you know, get up and go on their interview and seem kind of disinterested and things like that. And there's no question that's going to be recognized and really drop you down a lot. Certainly, you know, there's some obvious no-nos. Don't do anything inappropriate even outside of the interview when you're still, you know, informally on an interview, such as at the applicant dinner, which is really important, or your interactions with the residency coordinator and stuff like that. But I would say, you know, most of the folks we meet, you know, we're really very impressed with. It's just that there's a select group that really seem to be just incredibly engaged and interesting and seem like they fit in really well with our team and really kind of rise to the top.
I got to tell you, so this is awesome. I think we're about wrapping up here. I've pretty much worked through the things that I wanted to ask. Are there any other questions that you wish that I didn't ask that you wish I'd ask or anything else that I missed?
No, I think you're doing great.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That kind of concludes the interview. I guess. All right, everybody, that wraps it up. I hope you found this interview useful. If you have any questions or comments or questions for future interviews, send me an email, zack@emclerkship.com. Be sure to leave a podcast review on iTunes and tell all your friends about the podcast, all that good stuff. I hope you have a great week. And until next time, keep working hard, keep studying, and be sure to enjoy your shift.